Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Well, you were over there. The secretary criticized the conduct of the Iranian elections and Iran's record on democracy. He did so standing next to Saudi officials. How do you characterize Saudi Arabia's commitment to democracy? And does the administration believe that democracy is a buffer or barrier or against extremism?
I think what we'd say is that at this meeting, we were able to make significant progress with Saudi and GCC partners in both making a strong statement against extremism and also...
Does the administration believe that democracy is a buffer or barrier or against extremism?
And also putting in place certain measures through this GCC mechanism where we can combat extremism.
How do you characterize Saudi Arabia's commitment to democracy?
Clearly, one source of extremism, terrorism threat is coming from Iran. And that's coming from a part of the Iranian apparatus that is not at all responsive to its electorate.
How do you characterize Saudi Arabia's commitment to democracy?
Okay,
once again, let's try this. April 24th, 2019. My apologies for the sound. That's usually my fault, but this time it wasn't. I think the plug is having an issue. I've got it propped in here right now, so hopefully we don't lose sound again. I'll be keeping my eyes on the chat just in case. But damn it if that's not one of the most difficult things to watch as this man is struggling to answer the most obvious of questions. The obvious being the open, overt U.S. hypocrisy and contradiction in the way that they address the Saudi open authoritarian monarchy, the dictatorship, and the adversaries they claim they're fighting under the same name. It's very, very difficult to watch, and this is going to set us up for the first topic to discuss today. Lots of things we're going to get into, one being that the conflict arm of the Syrian war is now apparently over, according to Russian officials. Netanyahu says that he will now be naming the next internationally regarded as illegal Golan Heights settlement after Donald Trump for allowing this all to be possible. Gazans are now pointing out that they have their churches and their mosques that burn down all the time. Some that are much, much older than Notre Dame, and no one talks about it. The media doesn't cover it. But to begin today, the article that perfectly, the reason that I played that video to begin today, that's showing you the absurd contradiction, and that's an older video. This has been going on for a very long time. The absurd contradiction regarding how Saudis continue to violate every single international norm, every single international law, all while the U.S. pretends they're fighting that kind of thing when it pertains to their adversaries. It's hypocrisy, contradictions, right on their face. This coming from anti-media for the first article of the day, something that should truly shock you. Saudi Arabia executes 37 people in the largest mass beheading in years. And the story gets much worse than just that, but just that at face value. Executing 37 people publicly, beheading them, this is what the U.S. supports. These are the people the U.S. unequivocally stands by. How can you rectify this situation as an American who believes in what the U.S. is trying to do in Venezuela, who believe their lies about Iran? How can you then turn around and pretend that supporting these people is okay? I mean, really, I honestly want to know how people justify this act. And this gets worse than just what it says there, because it turns out these people, some of them children, many of them not even charged with a crime, continuing to do this, and then publicly displaying their bodies. This is what the U.S. oligarchy wants you to believe is a reforming government that's fighting for democracy and liberty around the world. Now, Saudi Arabia's interior ministry said that the kingdom executed 37 people just yesterday in connection with alleged terrorism crimes. I'm going to point out more as this goes on, the absolute absurdity of Saudi Arabia arresting and killing people for terrorism. as they're clearly one of the most key parts of what's currently infiltrating the world today, the terrorism that they're creating. Saudi Arabians with Israel and the United States are intricately involved in all of this, and them killing people for terrorism crimes is a sick joke. And I would argue clearly that these are probably the people that are trying to expose their crimes, and they're being killed under the guise of terrorism crimes, as they all do. Accuse them of that which you are guilty. And this apparently is the largest mass execution in the Gulf state for more than 3 years, as just like Israel, clearly emboldened by Trump's blind support for anything that they do. Now, most, if not all, of these people that were killed were convicted in the Specialized Criminal Court, the SEC, the kingdom's secretive and widely condemned anti-terrorism tribunal. I think we can argue that the word convicted shouldn't really carry as much weight when we're talking about the secretive and widely condemned anti-terrorism tribunal of one of the leading terrorism sponsors of the world. It says, quote, the death penalty was implemented on a number of culprits for adopting extremist terrorist ideologies and forming terrorist cells to corrupt and disrupt security, as well as spread chaos and provoke sectarian strife. This coming from the official Saudi press agency, the SPA, saying that they're the ones provoking sectarian strife. I mean, this is literally the best example I've ever seen of the pot calling the kettle black. As one academic wrote on Twitter, and rightly so, and this is these are the kind of people that we should be listening to, the people that study and follow and research this. As usual, Saudi Arabia execute one or two terrorists together with a huge number of peaceful activists to cover up the iron fist and bloody treatment of their latter. Lumping all the executed persons in one basket is unsuccessful camouflage. We'll let that sink in. This is not the first time this is happening. Murdering activists, you know, the very women and the people that acted, that were protesting for the women's right to drive, that the U.S. pretended this was a reforming nation, and then they went and arrested and killed these people. Yeah, this is what we're talking about. They pretend to be fighting for the reformists while literally locking up and killing the people that are arguing that you should be reforming. It's a sick joke. And as she says, they will murder all these innocent people collected with a couple of people that you can kind of widely acknowledge as terrorists, so it all just kind of gets washed away. But a Reprieve, it's a UK-based campaign group named Reprieve, which opposes the use of the death penalty, told Middle East Eye that five of its clients were among those that were killed. It said three of them were juveniles at the time of the alleged offenses for which they were executed, and that all five had been tortured. All five of them had been tortured into making false confessions. Not surprising. International law prohibits sentencing juveniles to death, regardless. So now we have them torturing juveniles to confess to something they didn't do and then killing them, which is also a violation of international law, none of which the Saudis or U.S. and Israel supporting them care at all about. Reprieve director Maya Foy called the executions, quote, an egregious display of brutality by Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. Many were convicted of non-lethal crimes, it says, such as attending protests. So now we have the Saudi government executing publicly people who attended protests. And they want you to believe they care about the lies they're making up about Venezuela while their ally is literally killing people for protesting. That's literally the claim they make about Assad and Maduro, that they're violently suppressing protests while we literally are talking about one of the chief allies of the U.S. killing people for attending a protest. This is their contradiction, their hypocrisy on stark display. It says the U.S. and the U.K., it says many were convicted of non-lethal crimes, such as attending protests, and that the Saudi regime believes it has impunity to carry out such patently illegal executions without notice should shock its international partners into action. Well, I agree with that. The fact that they can do this should shock us all. And it says the U.S. and the U.K. in particular must ensure that there are consequences and that no one else is unlawfully executed for exercising their right to freedom of expression. Except that we know that this won't happen, as the U.S. has gone above and beyond to show us that won't happen. The U.S. being the U.S. oligarchy, not the American people. The U.S. oligarchy has roundly shown its blind support for Israel and Saudi Arabia. They don't care if they want to murder 20 million people, or rather the U.S. involved with them killing these people, or if they want to murder Khashoggi in a foreign consulate. They don't care. They've shown this. It's more important to maintain their arms deals and their geostrategic control on the, in with Saudi Arabia. That is what matters to them. And as long as they can pretend they care about human life where it suits their agenda, they'll throw that out there. But the moment that their agenda comes into cross purpose with human life, their agenda always takes precedent. And we've seen this over and over and over. Now, according to the Reprieve case report, Munir al-Adam, one of those that were executed, was actually beaten so badly after his arrest in 2012 that he was left permanently deaf in one ear. You know, reform democracy. Now, Adam told the judge during his trial in 2015 that he had signed confessions attributed to him because he was exhausted by torture, according to Reprieve. He was then sentenced to death in June 2016 after he signed a confession to things he didn't do because he was tortured to do so and then killed for it. Now, the Saudi press agency said that one person, Khalid Abdul Karim, was crucified, a punishment reserved for particularly serious crimes. Executions in the kingdom are usually carried out by beheading, but some are in fact crucified, and the definition for them can vary on that depending on circumstances. But the kingdom commonly uses the term crucifixion to refer to the process of publicly displaying a corpse after execution. It says, quote, in Saudi Arabia, the practice of crucifixion refers to the court-ordered public display of the body after execution, along with the separated head, if beheaded. It takes place in a public square to allegedly act as a deterrent, according to Amnesty International. They're literally saying that they will behead people, hang their body and their head in the town square in front of civilians to make sure they know this is what happens if you join a protest. How chilling can this truly be? I mean, think about this, and the U.S. supports this. We're talking, is this the Middle Ages? They're literally hanging dead bodies in the town square to scare people. Children see this, and they know this. This is what the U.S. supports in its allies, as long as they're willing to bend the knee to U.S. interests. Openly displaying publicly mutilated bodies of people who simply did not want to do whatever the Saudi government wanted of them. And at the worst case scenario, simply showed up to a protest. Now, shockingly, in this case, authorities went so far, even in this gruesomely, went so far as to tie two of the deceased heads and bodies together, intermingling in the poles in the town square, in the manner of some grotesque adaptation to crucifixion, erected as literally as they want, they claim, a public warning and deterrent to others. So now they're tying dead body parts of people's crucified bodies and heads in the middle of the town square, tied together. And just in case you didn't hear me, this is what the U.S. supports in its allies. I can promise you, you won't hear anything about this from the U.S. government. Now, last year, the oil-rich Gulf state carried out the death sentences on 149 people, according to Amnesty International. The kingdom has executed more than 100 people just in the first 4 months of this year, and is right now on track to execute more than 300 this year. More than 300. Give or take, you know, we're talking about over 300 now in Sri Lanka. We're talking about over 300. And we're talking about cases where people care so much about human life. Oh, we have to care about these terrorism acts. And yet we have Saudi Arabia, which we do, by the way, have to care about those acts. But we have Saudi Arabia killing about that many people in their year just from executing innocent people. And no one seems to care about this. Can we not recognize the contradiction there? That we care about life in some cases, but not life in others. McAdams points out what should be obvious to all of us, and that is the overt hypocrisy of the U.S. in regard to the crimes of its allies, something that we point out on this show on a regular basis. He says, hey, Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State, did we miss your condemnation of this? 37 Saudis executed without trial. Does it bother you at all? I think we know the answer to that, if you're paying attention, and it should upset you. The lies were told. Now, Middle East analysts and observers were quick to point out the obvious, the clear anti-Iran message behind these killings. It says, quote, this is political, Ali Al-Ahmed of the Gulf Institute in Washington told the Associated Press. He says they didn't have to execute these people, but it's important for them to ride the American anti-Iranian wave. And I would argue that's the Israeli anti-Iranian wave that the Americans are the oligarchy of the U.S. is dutifully obliging. And now the Saudis are doing the same. Now, according to Amnesty International, 11 of the men who had been charged with spying for the 11 of the men that were executed had been charged for spying for Iran. And it's interesting how this, even amongst other top stories, this aspect of the case was left out. I only found this in one coverage of this case. This seems wildly important to what's going on. That 11 of the men that were unjustly executed without trial by Saudi Arabia were charged arbitrarily with spying for Iran, and that was kept out of the story. With 14 others killed for crimes related to pro-Shia, anti-Saudi government protests between 2011 and 2012, including a man who was only 16 years old. I mean, the real grotesque joke here is that the Saudis are fighting terrorism at all. It's just as preposterous as the lie that the U.S. is fighting terrorism instead of actually using it as the proxy that it is. Which is why you may be asking why I titled the show I did today, because I guarantee you I'm going to get some pushback. U.S. proxy for Sri Lanka? Trust me, we're going to get to it. We're going to get to it next with the next story, as well as finish the day, to really drive home the point that ISIS is a U.S. proxy, and we have to come to terms with this. Now, as I just discussed in the last show, what took place in Sri Lanka has direct ties, you know, to the special Saudi brand of particularly violent extremism, and that is Wahhabism. Another aspect that the mainstream media will never let you hear about, because again, they do not talk about their allies or even allude to the connection of their crimes when it ties to specifically Israel and Saudi Arabia. But in this case, ISIS says behind Sri Lanka bombings was retaliation for New Zealand mosque massacre. So it's nice to see that the U.S. proxy is now standing up and taking claim for something. Now, whether that is the case, whether ISIS as their proxy is behind this, or whether this was some other agenda, or whether they just told their proxy to stand up and take credit for it so it could be used for their agenda, either way, it seems really fishy that we should just take ISIS's word that they did this, as they've claimed things in the past when they weren't. And again, we cannot deny the connection to the West and the creation of ISIS and the funding and arming and supporting and protecting of these groups. All of this ties together. So whether this is them actually being behind it, and that clearly ties back to the West, or they were just told to stand up and claim it for the agenda, either way, there's a lot going on here that we should be very skeptical about. And again, I'm going to dive in further about why ISIS as itself needs to be regarded for what it is today. And at the most non-controversial way to say it possible, that there are clear connections to the United States, to the creation and fomenting of ISIS to this day. Something we really need to wrap our minds around as Americans. Now, shortly after the death toll from Easter Sunday's bombings in Sri Lanka and the defused and one that was partially defused the next day, about, I believe, 9 or 10 bombs they ultimately found, unless there's more that I didn't see, the death toll climbed above 300. Now, Sri Lankan government suspicions that a domestic jihadi organization had help from an international terror network while planning the bombings were bolstered when ISIS apparently took credit for the attacks, which again is suspicious at the end of the day. But as 21st Century Wire asked the logical question, can we really trust ISIS's news agency, which is where this came from? The claim was made via a report from ISIS's Amaq news agency. Before ISIS took credit for the attack, regardless, a Sri Lankan official revealed that Sunday's attacks were intended, as they claim, as retaliation for the killing of 50 Muslims during last month's shooting in Christchurch, New Zealand. Now, however, the Sri Lankan government didn't offer any evidence for that claim, as they rarely do, or the claim that Sunday's attacks were planned by two Islamic groups. And as usual, the mainstream media reports that the mainstream media regurgitated what ISIS told them was the case without question. Can we not see how alarming that is? And this is now the narrative that ISIS did it. Interesting how the mainstream media has so much blind trust in the claims of ISIS. Now, you could make take a couple things away from this. Either that it shows us the very clear role that ISIS is playing, and whether the mainstream media is aware of that role or not, that it's their job to take that and regurgitate it because ISIS is an arm of the intelligence agencies, or the mainstream media is just simply being told to do so and they do it. Either way, we can see that there is more to this story as they just regurgitate what they said. They stand up and say, I did it. And mainstream media the next day says, ISIS did it. You know this now, apparently, because ISIS told you so. It's just like the intelligence agencies tell them so. And so they report it. That's the way I'm seeing this. Now, meanwhile, the number of suspects arrested in connection with the attacks have increased to 40 from 24 as of Tuesday. interesting here. Now, the government had declared a national emergency that allowed its sweeping powers to interrogate and detain suspects, which, again, is something that should be alarming in all of these cases, that now what we're seeing is this is becoming the norm. You shut down social media, you get basically martial law powers to just detain and interrogate, however you see fit, all because, you know what, if we didn't, bad things might happen. You never know what. Be fearful that if we don't have all-encompassing control, that bad things may happen. Bad things may be said. We want to protect your baby ears from any negative things that may be coming out from the internet, so we're going to shut it all down. I mean, it's just ridiculous, and this is where we're headed. This is what we're seeing. Now, on Monday, the FBI pledged, the FBI had pledged to send agents to Sri Lanka and provide laboratory support for the investigation. Personally, I would say no thank you. I don't need them in here manipulating and changing things to suit their narrative. Now, hinting at possible ISIS involvement, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said during a Monday press conference that radical Islamic terror remained a threat even after ISIS's defeat in Syria. You know, just driving home the idea that I know we said they're defeated, but we need to be even more fearful today, right? Even though they're gone and we defeated and we won, it's all over, but they're everywhere. So be fearful. I mean, it's just, they're maintaining their excuse de jure to be able to invade other countries. I don't know whether that's the fact that Trump just spoke off the cuff and said they're defeated, even though it's stupidly obvious that they're not. I ultimately don't know. But the truth is, they're maintaining the lie that they need to be there fighting them, even though it's a group that they're part of. Of course, ISIS's claim couldn't be confirmed, and the group has been known, of course, to make opportunistic claims in the past. You know, but again, mainstream media just chose to report it as fact because that's what they do. Now, the extremist group said the attacks were targeting Christians and coalition countries and were carried out by fighters from its organization, which, again, aligns perfectly with the narrative they're trying to sell you. Now, speculation that the government had advanced warning of the attacks, but failed to act amid a power struggle between the country's president and prime minister, unnerved citizens, and rightly so, and contributed to a brewing backlash, arguing, as we often see in these cases, that there's evidence that governments to some degree are involved or were aware of very bad things and either were involved or allowed it to happen for plenty of different reasons. This is historically documented throughout the history of the United States as well as other governments. So it's a rightful thing that we should be considering. As I said in the very beginning, this type of question should never be ignored, of whether or not this kind of thing could have been created or used to carry out an agenda. It's an honest question that is proven in the history of governments. Now, following the bombings, schools and in mass as well have been canceled until at least Monday, it said, with masses called off until further notice. So clearly they're operating in a state of fear, and rightly so, knowing that people have been killed, but the reality here is this is being used in every possible way. And now we're seeing the ISIS proxy being used to claim the act and driving the agenda forward. Whether that's the case or not, we'll never truly know, because we know, at the very least, behind the scenes, the involvement with these Western powers in regard with the very entities they're claiming are behind these kind of acts. Not to mention the obvious connection of Saudi Arabia to the ideology this is behind, none of which is going to be told to you by the mainstream media. Now, on a related story coming from Mint Press News in regard to the Notre Dame fire, and as well as Sri Lanka, and talking about mosques and plenty of other things, it's interesting what gets attention from the mainstream media and what doesn't. Those that are paying attention, I think you're aware of why that is. You can see the reality, the lies, the deception that they're going to great lengths to carry out. But for those that don't, it's interesting to notice the contradiction. Why do some mosques matter? Why do some churches matter? Why do others not? Usually it's the same line that we're talking about today, that adversaries are bad, U.S. allies are good, regardless of the actions they carry out. This article from Mint Press News, Notre Dame of Gaza. Our mosques and churches are also burning. Now, obviously, what happened in Notre Dame is very sad. I mean, anything like that that's just dripping with history and the people that grew up around it. I mean, there's so much history involved in these kind of ideas, or just these locations, that it is very sad to see something like this happen. But it's also happening in places that it's being willfully ignored. And it's not to diminish one or the other, but it needs to show us the reality that some are chosen to be talked about and some are ignored. And I'll leave that up to you to decide what the factor is in why and how they choose that. Now, hundreds of Palestinian homes, and as well as, and the, really the point here, homes is something that I could even talk about, but hundreds of Palestinian homes and houses of worship were targeted by the Israeli military in previous wars, most notably 2008, 2009, and specifically 2012. But in 2014, war was the most brutal and most destructive yet. Thousands were killed, more injured. Nothing was immune to Israeli bombs. According to Palestinian Liberation Organization records, 63 mosques were completely destroyed and 150 damaged in that war alone, oftentimes people seeking shelter inside them while they're being bombed. Now, many generations of French Catholics have assigned the Notre Dame Cathedral with its layered meanings and symbolism since the 12th century. While the fire consumed the oak roof and much of the structure, as people saw and rightly upset about, French citizens and many around the world watched in awe and sadness. It's as if the memories, prayers, and hopes of a nation that is rooted in time were suddenly revealed, rising all at once with the pillars of smoke and fire, as the article poetically put it. But the very media that covered the news of the Notre Dame fire seemed entirely oblivious to the obliteration of everything held sacred in Palestine, as day after day, Israeli war machinery continues to blow up, bulldoze, and desecrate. And it's not just in Palestine, mind you. I continue to point out what's happening in Yemen on a regular basis, where we also have some of the oldest structures and concepts in humankind being destroyed. No one seems to care. Thank you for the super chat. Now, it's as if our religions... This is one I recommend you read in its entirety. As always, I always say that I hope you take the time to dive in and read every one of these articles for yourself. But this one is very touching because a lot of this is written in first person by somebody on the ground. Somebody who's experiencing this, who's asking the honest question of why one thing matters more than the other. And he says, it is as if our religions are not worthy of respect, despite the fact that Christianity was born in Palestine, he says. It was there that Jesus roamed the hills and valleys of our historic homeland, teaching people about peace, love, and justice. Palestine is also central to Islam. Yet Christian and Muslim holy sites are besieged, often raided, and shut down per military dictates. Moreover, the Israeli army protected Masonic Jewish extremists. Want to demolish Al-Aqsa. And the Israeli government has been digging underneath its foundation for many years, which is something that people should be concerned about. And he says, although none of this is done in secret, international outrage remains muted. In fact, many find Israel's actions justified. Some have bought into the ridiculous explanation offered by the Israeli military that bombing mosques is a necessary security measure. This all goes in with demonizing the entire religion or race or creed of people. Others are motivated by dark religious prophecies of their own. And on a side note, if you're interested more on that specific topic, No More News has a lot of great coverage on this topic. There is definitely something to be researched there, and clearly reasons why they consider that they're digging underneath the foundation of this likely next to be demolished mosque. Now, Palestine is only a microcosm of the whole region. Many of us are familiar with the horrific destruction carried out by militant groups against world cultural heritage in Syria, mostly backed by the United States and Western powers, as well as in Iraq and even Afghanistan. Every mosque, every church, every graveyard, every piece of art and every artifact is significant because it is laden with meaning. The meaning bestowed on them by those who have built or sought in them an escape, a moment of solace, hope, faith, and peace. As Notre Dame burned, as the author wrote, he thought of all the other mosques, churches, and holy sites that have been destroyed in the Middle East, some much older and more sacred, yet received zero mainstream media attention. While the fire at the French cathedral might have been accidental, some may argue otherwise, but might have been, destroyed Palestinian houses of worship were intentionally targeted and are to this very day. The Israeli culprits are yet to be held accountable. And I simply ask anyone watching this show right now to sit back and acknowledge the contradiction therein. Why does one thing matter more than the other? And if it's simply because there's a different type of people in one place versus the other, then there's a problem within you, not the world in that case. Because there are good people and bad people everywhere. And to think that any one culture, one creed, or one religion is worse or all good or all bad is straight up bigotry. And that's the problem here. And this is what I'm getting at, is all of this stems from the idea that this, what happened here, is more important than here because these people are all bad. And it all ties back to the same U.S. Israeli foreign policy, casting all of these people as some kind of terrorist group. And we need to see how bad this is. There are good and bad people everywhere. And I'll tell you right now that I see more bad people involved with foreign policy on our end than I do in other places today. Hopefully you can see the same. But speaking of Israel committing crimes with impunity that the U.S. not only ignores but openly supports, for the next article coming from 21st Century Wire, Netanyahu pledges to name illegal Golan settlement after Donald Trump. How nice. How nice. You can just hear Netanyahu. This wouldn't be possible without your support, Donald Trump. Thank you so much. Clearly. As the world acknowledges how utterly illegal this is, and it's never not been illegal, the UN has always maintained this is legal, and they just do it anyway. And not only they're doing it anyway, he's even standing up and saying, thank you, Trump, I'm even going to name it after you, as we're both collectively breaking the law and openly saying that we don't care about it. Again, what does this tell the average individual? What does this tell the average American? What does this tell the average person around the world? Laws don't matter if you're strong enough to stand against them. This is the worst possible message that we're giving everyone, including people growing up within the United States, that think this is the way we're supposed to be. It's truly alarming. Now, in a move that is meant to express deep gratitude of the illegal occupiers of the UN-recognized territory in Palestine and Syria, of course, Israel's embattled far-right nationalist Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has pledged to name the Zionist entity's newest illegal settlement in the occupied Golan Heights after none other than U.S. President Donald J. Trump. It's very kind of him to do this. It really is, to see the willingness with which they're both happy to break international law.
I'm here on the beautiful Golan Heights. All Israelis were deeply moved when President Trump made his historic decision to recognize Israel's sovereignty over the Golan Heights. Therefore, after the Passover holiday, I intend to bring to the government a resolution calling for a new community on the Golan Heights named after President Donald J. Trump.
Now, in late March, Trump had announced that he would recognize the illegally occupied Golan Heights as Israel's sovereign territory, as we all saw. We talked about it at the time. Of course, as part of Netanyahu's election campaign ploy, which clearly worked for him, to curry favor with Israel's far right, this, along with a number of other stunts, clearly helped him swing the election. We see this now, and Trump is a clear part of that. Now, Israel, as you may know of, I've talked about numerous times, took over the Syrian land, which is Syrian land, after the 1967 Six-Day War under the guise of a security buffer. Although it is believed that Israel had always intended to steal this land. It's fertile agricultural region. It also has bountiful water and oil resources. Big surprise. But they want to make it seem like this is an act of necessity. But in reality, when you dig in and understand and actually look past what they're trying to lie to you about, you see that they've always planned to do this. Now, those suspicions turned out to be well-founded, clearly, as Israel then annexed it by force in 1981, ignoring multiple UN resolutions and just flouting international law. Again, as we're clearly seeing take place today, they don't care. They use international law when it suits their agenda. Otherwise, they just simply don't care about it. Now, at present, some 40 to 50,000 residents live in the occupied Golan Heights, comprised mostly of Druze and Alawites, along with a majority percentage now of illegal European, North American, and South African Jewish settlers, strategically planted in key areas by the occupier government in Tel Aviv. Now, as I recently reported, and I find this to be incredibly important, Israel is already planning to send 250,000 settlers to the Golan Heights. Again, in a location with a population of 50,000 at the most, he's talking about sending 250,000 Jewish illegal settlers. I mean, half there already are illegal Jewish settlers, and this is ethnic cleansing. This is what we're talking about. This is what they're trying to do. And regardless of the lies and the nonsense they try to throw out, it is illegal. And everyone agrees it is illegal. So they're the bad guy. They are doing the wrong thing here while lying to you and saying the opposite. No matter how many things they try, excuses they try to throw out, how many times they try to initiate or call on Iran's name, they say, oh, we need to do this because Iran's the bad guy. It doesn't change the facts that they are wrong. The U.S. is wrong. They're violating agreements. They're violating resolutions. They are breaking the law. This is a simple fact. This is what we need to move forward from. Now, if we want to acknowledge, yes, the U.S. is breaking the law, but then let's do so and have a conversation about it. But no, people are arguing this is not illegal, despite the fact that everyone acknowledges that it is. But speaking of Syria, it is truly astounding that the Syrian government was able to fight off the illegal invasion of the U.S. and its allies. It's astounding and heartening, actually. And of course, if the U.S. was to be believed, the entirety of Syria would be covered in chemical weapons by now, as they have repeatedly falsely claimed that they had to maintain control, right? They had to in Syria, because if Assad got control, he would immediately gas his own people because, you know, that makes sense. They said this countless times, despite there being no evidence, and in fact, mountains of evidence to show that they were lying, but they kept at it. And now we see that the only safe places in Syria, the only safe places, are in fact the ones controlled by Assad and his allies. Funny how that works. And now, by their account, their military phase of this conflict is officially over, according to Russian officials. Which may just be kind of a propagandized statement, but may actually show us that it may indeed be over as far as they're concerned. Russian Chief of General Staff, military phase of Syrian conflict is over. In addition, he adds on 3,000 civilians killed by U.S.-led coalition. That's below par for the course for previous U.S. interventions. But still, we're talking about 3,000 people, which is worse than all the claims they're trying to throw out about their adversaries right now. But it doesn't matter because the U.S. is saying, oh, well, we were fighting for good things and fighting bad, bad people. So we killed 3,000 innocent civilians. But as long as we claim we were trying to do good things, it's all okay. This is the logic with which we're surrounded today. Now, according to General Valery Gerasimov, I looked this up earlier, Chief of the General Staff of the Armed Forces of Russia, speaking at the Moscow International Security Conference on April 24th, the military phase of the Syrian conflict has ended. Official statement is over. The military arm is over, he claims. He says, quote, currently the military phase of the conflict is over. Within 2 years, with Russian support, he says, the collapse of the Syrian state was prevented and the most of the country's territory was returned to the control of government forces. Which is correct, and they did. They effectively stopped another catastrophic U.S. regime change. Now, the general added that all the conditions that were needed for a political settlement and a reconciliation process in Syria have been set. He also stressed that there would be no more large-scale military operations in the war-torn country, which I find interesting in regard to places like Idlib and other locations where there are still an Al-Tanf specifically, or even the Golan Heights, where Syria has vowed to take back every inch of its territory. So if this just simply means that Russia will no longer be partaking, I don't know. But it's an interesting thing to put out there. Now, commenting on the U.S.-led coalition operations in Syria, the general also said that at least 3,000 people, including 1,400 women and children, were killed by the coalition. These numbers are close to those provided by independent groups such as Air Wars. And this is just from the U.S.-led coalition. Now, while Syria will not likely witness any large-scale battles from now on, the country is far from being stable. Last week, more than 50 Syrian service members were killed by terrorist groups. But, you know, ISIS is defeated, so it's all okay. This is what they want us to think. But as 21st Century Wire put it, in regard to the ending of this war and what it means for the U.S. to continue to force its presence there, even though it's over, U.S. defeat in Syria leaves only a campaign of spite. So true. So true. This is exactly what we're talking about. That this is, at the end of the day, the U.S. remaining here is out of spite. It's out of an effort to keep the country destabilized. Again, this is the new evolution of wars that aren't won by the U.S. It becomes another Afghanistan, another 17-year effort of constant destabilization that benefits nothing, no one in the United States, when in fact it actually costs us billions and billions of dollars to maintain a campaign of saving face for the U.S. government. Destabilizing, making them continue to look really, really bad. So you can continue to say, oh, well, we tried. Look at how destabilized that country is. Oh, man, right? We can't let them look good because then it would make it very clear that the U.S. presence was the only thing that was causing the problem. So they have to maintain the destabilization and make sure it just never generally ends so they never officially lose. This is what we're seeing. And this is what we're looking at here. And it is out of spite. It truly is. Now, the U.S. engineered proxy war, which is what it is, against Syria, which began in 2011, and the crescendo of the so-called Arab Spring has ended in all but absolute defeat for Washington. And that's embarrassing. This is why they don't want you to see it this way. Now, its primary goal of overthrowing the Syrian government and or rendering the nation divided and destroyed, as it has done to Libya, has not only failed, but triggered a robust Russian and Iranian response, giving both nations an unprecedented foothold in Syria and unprecedented influence throughout the rest of the region, which is literally the opposite of what they were trying to accomplish as the United States. Yet many war hawks in Trump's administration, pretty much all of them, want us to believe that, defeated or not, as they're clearly not, but they want us to believe that, defeated or not, that ISIS is still a global threat that demands infinite and unfettered U.S. military operations around the world, of course, to protect us all. Even though they're defeated, but don't worry, we need to keep at it to make sure they stay defeated. This just became an infinite operation, which it always was meant to be. If this is true, then ISIS is a threat not only to the United States, but all of its coalition partners, mainly Western European nations. So then why wouldn't they eagerly be committing troops to the coalition instead of the opposite? If ISIS truly represented a threat to our national security back home, as they've always claimed, then why would the U.S. withdraw any troops in the first place? If this were true, as Trump maintains is about to happen, the withdrawal from Syria. The answer, as this article makes abundantly clear, is very simple. ISIS is a creation of the West, a tool explicitly designed to help isolate the Syrian government and carry out military and terrorist operations the U.S. and its partners were unable to do openly, you see. So they had to create this proxy to carry this out, to make it appear as if they weren't involved, when in fact, they're absolutely involved. Now, it was in a leaked 2012 U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency memo, which you can see here, that revealed the U.S. and its allies' intent to create what it called a Salafist principality in eastern Syria. The memo explicitly stated that, quote, if the situation unravels, there is the possibility of establishing a declared or undeclared Salafist principality in eastern Syria. And this is exactly what the supporting powers to the opposition want in order to isolate the Syrian regime. Now, as in and of itself, just that paragraph from a U.S. document makes it abundantly clear that they were trying to destabilize Syria, that they were supporting the opposition, and the goal was to isolate the Syrian regime, all of which they argue is not true today. And yet here we are staring at a document where it says the exact opposite of what they claim. It says exactly this, that what we know to be the truth, that they were destabilizing them. On clarifying who these supporting powers were in the document, the memo clarifies, it is the West, Gulf countries, and Turkey that support the opposition, while China, Russia, and Iran support the regime. So they're openly stating that their allies, the West, the Gulf countries, and Turkey, support the opposition, and they're the ones that wanted to create a Salafist principality to isolate the Syrian regime. Again, I mean, how many times must we show obvious examples of what the reality is and then stand up and lie to you and give you the exact opposite? The link to this memo is in the show notes. You can look at it for yourself. Now, this Salafist principality or Islamic State would show up on cue, placing additional pressure on an already besieged government in Damascus and eventually creating a pretext for direct Western military intervention in Syria. Exactly what we've been talking about. This is what the goal was. Now, only through Russia's own intervention in 2015 were U.S. plans overturned and its overt war against Syria frozen in limbo, because Russia stepped in, as they said in the beginning, and actually saved Syria from being overtaken. And with Iran's help and Syrian's help, actually fought the terrorists that the U.S. were using to destabilize the country, which is a fact. People still argue that this isn't 100% verifiable. As I continue to say, we have somebody running for president who is also saying the same thing. It is a very easily verifiable fact that the United States created, funded, armed, and protected these terrorist groups. That doesn't mean that there aren't some factions that got out of control, that are carrying out terrorist attacks that they don't have control over. But nonetheless, that's still their fault. they're part of the creation of that proxy, as well as creating the destructive foreign policy that creates blowback from organic terrorists. All of it stems back to their aggressive imperialist actions and the creation of terrorists to use to carry that stuff out. Now, whether President Trump maintains troops in eastern Syria or not, nothing will change or reverse the significant strategic and geopolitical defeat Washington has suffered here. Instead, troop levels and deployments in not only Syria, but also neighboring Iraq serve to contribute to the next phase. You see, the next phase of U.S. interference in the Middle East, simply spoiling reconciliation and reconstruction, stopping them from doing better. Right? We need to make sure that Syria remains to look like a destabilized country so we can continue to point and see and say, look, you should have let us do what we wanted. We would have made it better. As we're killing tons, countless civilians, destroying the country, bombing civilian infrastructure. Let us take over the country because it would have been better. That's what they want you to think. That's why they need to maintain the lack of reconciliation or reconstruction. Now, this most recent episode of U.S. military intervention in the Middle East, fighting terrorists, it itself created and deliberately deployed specifically to serve as a pretext, is an example of U.S. slash and burn foreign policy. It was a redesigned regime change campaign spanning both Syria and Iraq, designed to attract domestic and international support by using an appalling but artificially engineered enemy to destroy both nations and allow the U.S. and its coalition partners to rebuild the regions as it saw fit. How do we not see that this plays in with everything they're constantly doing, as well as supplying more arms and more vehicles and more aircraft to the groups that were bought? So we just talked about arming both sides of the wars. This is what we're getting at. And now what they're talking about, the plan was to destroy both these nations and allow them to rebuild them as they saw fit, to allow them to come back and thrive after fighting off the U.S. they can't allow. So they're going to maintain destabilization, even though they've lost. ISIS remnants have clung, without coincidence, to every single territory within the U.S. that we deem as U.S. zone of influence. The point being that everywhere the U.S. maintains a presence is where the ISIS and the terrorist factions just happen to seem to thrive and survive. Interesting how that works. And even while acknowledging the absurdity of the U.S. continuing to cite ISIS as its pretext to remain in Syria, while they're the ones claiming the group is defeated to begin with, it's even more absurd that they are the ones behind its very creation and yet still using them as their claim to be there. In the absence of a sensible, unified purpose, attractive incentives, or a coherent strategic plan, the U.S. has instead turned to simply spoiling reconciliation and reconstruction through attempts to divide the region along ethnic lines, as they've done in every other location they've tried to overthrow, as well as preserve what few terrorists remain, their proxies, by shuffling them between Iraq and Syria through territory U.S. forces occupy, and by targeting nations and their allies with sanctions to hinder reconstruction efforts. Now, again, the documentation is in the show notes. I highly recommend you dig through it for yourself to find out in their own statement that their goal was to destabilize Syria, as they pretend they're fighting for the Syrian people. And think about how that relates to how that relates to Yemen or Venezuela or any other country they pretend they're there fighting for people. Take a moment and reflect on what this truly means and how they're now destroying the country further just so they don't look bad. That is truly spiteful. What we really need to stand back and recognize after all this stuff I'm talking about today, as the U.S. oligarchy blindly supports the Saudis as they continue to murder people for no charge, and they're the good guys, supposedly, what we need to recognize here today specifically with all of this is that the worst among us today, the truly worst among us, are in fact the ones masquerading as the heroes. And it's time that we put a stop to that. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Hopefully this information can wake some people up. So get it out there. Spread the link. Tap people on the shoulder. Plant the seed. Let it grow. Come back later with the next video that we talk about. But get the information out there. Get it in front of people who would not otherwise see it. As always, if you'd like to support this channel, the show notes is full of links for PayPal and Patreon and Bitbacker and whatever else, as well as buying Question Everything t-shirt if you'd like to support this channel by sporting it and showing people that you support us. However it is, we are people funded. We can't exist without you. So thank you for your support. I'm humbled by it every single day. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.